Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning. It is Wednesday morning, the 20th of June, and the sun is rising all around our country, and the tomb is empty. That is good news indeed. We know our Savior lives, so there is always hope and always future in his beautiful kingdom of Jesus. You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and I am joined now in studio by one of our regular contributors to the program. This is Bill English is in the studio with us. Good morning, Bill.
Well, good morning, most reverend high, Dr. Peter Kapsner.
You know, stuff like that will get you invited back every hour. You just, you know, keep working through that. Yeah, okay. This morning. It's very helpful. Logan Roush will be back with us tomorrow. He's terrible at bringing the name into it. He just can't say it quite right. So we got to work on him a little bit.
Well, PSN is a hard set of consonants to say.
It really is. It's a terrible last name. So we talked with Dr. Kent Kaiser obviously a few moments ago. And I just want to point out for our listeners in the Twin Ports as well as in Fargo that if you are participating in the Trump rally or you just see some of what's happening around you, we would love to hear from you. Just get some eyes and ears in the scene. It's just always helpful to get first-person perspective on that. Give us a call. Shoot us an email. We'll read some of your comments on the air tomorrow. And Matt, at the break, you made the point that I have my Oceans 13, 14, 15, 11, 13, all the, you know, the characters messed up, that I actually referenced one of my 1980s favorites, pop stars, that being Billy Ocean is a singer, Caribbean Queen, 1984. I can still hear that playing in my head from the time. It's actually Danny Ocean, who is the thief in these movies. And Bill, I don't know if you saw the headlines, but we've been talking a bit about the burglars that rappelled from the roof down into this Best Buy, and they stole at least $100,000 worth of Apple products. And it was a Mission Impossible kind of scene from what I understand.
Why would you steal? Am I on?
Am I on? Okay. I think I hear you okay. Yeah.
Okay, then the light isn't working over here on my panel. Why would anybody steal $100,000 worth of Apple products? Well, that is beyond me.
We did sort out it's only really a couple personal computers is what you get for that.
Oh,
but,
okay.
But you're going to alienate the rest of my family because I walk in and I feel that it's this Mac Apple ecosystem every day when I walk in. And I'm this holdout in the PC. I get it. I'm the only one that gets viruses on my computer in our family, but I'm still holding out, Bill.
Well, yeah. To me, Android's way to go. I'm not an Apple guy at all. My daughter does the iPhone thing. I don't get it.
Yeah.
So.
And once you're in, right, then you're in. I mean, you're buying thousands of dollars of products at this point.
I have bought thousands of dollars of products at Best Buy. Sometimes I wish I knew how to rappel.
Well, we'll take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll talk more with Bill English about Bible and business and all things relative to just how our Christian faith intersects with our daily life and our vocation. So you're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes here. Oh, it's 8 minutes past the hour. Matt, you're killing me by just rubbing in this Billy Ocean reference here in Caribbean Queen. I feel like I'm 14 years old all over again. And I say we're joined in studio on Faith Radio Mornings by Bill English, comes in each week and talks about Bible and business with us. And interesting headline you sent my direction that I couldn't quite sort out at first. And that was the idea of how much we're getting burned out through collaboration in business. And I would think, Bill, that collaboration is this positive word and it allows us to interact and share the burdens with each other. But you're finding something very different these days as people are getting more and more burnt out.
Well, anything in extreme will burn you out. It really doesn't matter what it is, except maybe for sleep. And so
I could use a lot more of that. Yes,
yeah,
I
could use a lot more of that, too. So this is an HBR, Harvard Business Review article that I read recently, and they talk about collaboration burning people out because of beliefs. Role schedules network is the second one, and then behavior is a third one.
And how does this play itself out in the daily lives of business people where this is taking shape?
Yeah, a lot of people believe that, or a lot of people live with the belief that they want to be helpful, seen as helpful, relevant, participatory, collaborative.
Yeah, these are all such positive words, Bill.
Yeah, they are. But at some point, you get involved in so many things that you really can't keep up and it starts to burn you out.
Hmm. And so what are some suggestions and ways in which you're obviously still part of a team in business and there's responsibilities associated with that, but what are some ways that you can kind of take back some of your schedule and maybe avoid some of the burnout?
Yeah, so some of the things that you can do that really to get to the nub of this is you want to list out what your key priorities are in your job, what your core deliverables are back to your employer. And then you need to manage your attention towards those things. Collaboration has a way, when it's too broad and it's too much, it has a way of distracting us. And so we don't pay enough attention to the core aspects of what we're being measured on in our jobs. And then after that, you want to make sure that you're spending time on equal or better value of than what your core efforts are. And you want to be saying no to some of the stuff that isn't really core to what you do.
Mm. Does it help too? I think there's this, with the advent of technology and the way it's taking shape in our culture, that there's this pressure to almost be always on, that you're always accessible, you're always available, whether it's 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 o'clock at night, you get a text from your boss, you get an email, that there's this weird, it's all blended together, our life and our work. Can you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, you know, and we're running into this in a number of places. For instance, we got a letter from our bank at one of the engagements that I'm working on Saturday night.
Hmm.
And why a bank would send us electronically a letter on Saturday night and expect us to have consumed it and responded to it by Monday morning is beyond me. You've got to take time to turn off.
Yeah.
One of the things I recommend is that you go dark. You know, you just turn off Outlook, you turn off email, you turn off Twitter, you turn it off for 1 to 2 hours, and you focus on your job. 85% of our time now in today's world is really spent on basically doing email, going to meetings, and being on the phone. 85% of it. So that's
an incredible amount of collaboration.
A credible amount of collaboration and interpersonal activity. You need more reflective time. If you're an executive, I'm recommending now that you take at least 1 day a month. Try to get 1 day a month away from the office, or 1 day a month where your office is locked out, where you are not interruptible. People simply cannot schedule. They can't call you. They can't they can email you, but you're not going to respond. And you take time to actually reflect and reprioritize. It's amazing how you and your job, me and mine, and others who are listening here in their jobs, if you just take a day a month or even a day a quarter, and you get away and you say, what have I really been spending my time on? You can use a product from Microsoft called My Analytics, and it'll analyze your email and your calendar to tell you where you've been spending your time.
Oh, it's fascinating.
And just use a tool like that and say, is this really where I should be spending my time, and how can I reprioritize?
Hmm. And how do you help people as the workday ends then, too, to go dark for the remainder of their day, that they're not feeling the pressure to log in? Because, of course, we can log into almost any system remotely these days and almost any profession. We can really, if we wanted to, be working 24/7. So what does it look like to go dark, you know, after the workday ends?
You know, I don't know, because I'm usually sitting up doing emails while I'm watching House Hunter or, you know, Good Bones or whatever it is. In fact, last night I emailed you and Paul around 7 or 7:30 with the notes for today's spot.
You
right?
did, yeah.
And
absolutely.
I was really surprised that you responded, because I thought, well, the guy's got to be getting to bed around 8 or 8:30 to get up as early as you do.
Well, and when you get that doctorate, you know, Bill, you learn some techniques, so you don't even need sleep anymore. I mean, that's, you know, and I know that you're troubled
were
by
you,
that.
Were you one of those guys in grad school who could do about 4 hours a night and you were fine?
No. My wife can attest to, you know, if I don't get that 7-8 hours, it's not a great scene.
I tell you, there were some guys in seminary about 4 hours a night. They were good, and I was so jealous of
them. Oh, I never liked those people. You know, Christian love was something I struggled with in that kind of situation. So, but can you go, and to your point, I mean, I'm a little bit pot calling the kettle black here. How can we go dark
You just turn off your phone.
And do you, over time, do you sort of let the waters calm? You're not feeling always this tension that I've got to be checking in?
Yes. And if you are feeling tension because you're not checking in, then that, to me, that shows there might be an addictive quality to your collaboration.
Yeah.
If you can't turn it off and without feeling anxiety, then to me there's a little bit of addictive quality there.
Yeah, great word. We're speaking with our regular guest, Bill English, here about the Bible and business and bringing these two fields together. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, Bill, you have some business tips we'll talk through, and then also you've got a trip coming up to Israel that would be really fun to walk through. All right. Well, this is Faith Radio Mornings. We'll take a short break and be back with more with Bill English. Is that more 1980s music, Matt? Are you still, you're still teasing me. You and Paul are still kind of jamming it in relative to this Billy Ocean reference. Are you not?
The Power of Love, baby.
The Power of
Love. Come on, that's Huey Lewis.
That is Huey Lewis.
How can you not like Huey
Back
Lewis?
Back to the Future?
It was Back to the Future, one of the all-time classics, right, with the DeLorean. And how fast did they have to go again to get through time?
88 miles an hour.
I should admit this, but I've never managed to travel back through time when I hit that speed. So, Bill, have you ever been back through time? I know you're going 88 all the time, in your life.
I drive the speed limit.
You drive the
speed limit. I do.
Yeah, I find driving under grace actually sometimes is helpful. I don't know that that's the best policy, but we'll roll with that. So I love, on your Bible and business site and some of what you get into, Bill, one of the tips that you talk about that are undeniable, you have 68 undeniable truths about business ownership.
I do, yep.
And one of them that I really enjoy, and especially dealing with young people who are trying to figure out their vocation and the kinds of things that they want to do with their life, there gets to be this weird split between what some would consider a holy calling towards vocational ministry or something in the Bible theology field, and then all of the sort of secular junior varsity kinds of roles in life, you make the point that God really does call some people to own business, that this is also a Christian vocation or can be that.
Oh, sure it is, because some people are entrepreneurs. Actually, a lot of pastors are entrepreneurs, as you might suspect.
Yeah.
But God does call some people to own a business, to create wealth, and to steward that wealth for the kingdom of God. And so, the calling to own a business is a high and holy calling. I estimate there's somewhere between 2 and 3 million Christian business owners nationwide, based on some census numbers and other things that I throw into the formula. And whether they own a business of 100,000 or some will own businesses of 100 million or more, doesn't matter. Your stewardship responsibilities and opportunities, philanthropy opportunities before the Lord, are significant. Mm. And that is as much a calling as it is being a pastor, being a missionary, or being a practical theology professor.
So how would you suggest, if you're a Christian business person, what are some tangible ways that it might impact your daily decision making in business and how you go about it?
Yeah, that's really, really great. Actually, very insightful question. At Bible and Business, we have the four purposes for business. Each one of those purposes has a measurement that goes with it. Hmm. So it's products, people, passions, and philanthropy.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so when you go through those four, if those are the four purposes for business that I think God has given us in Scripture, then how are we measuring our business towards success of fulfilling those purposes? And you will find that those things are not measured in most MBA programs, even at Christian colleges. They're just not discussed.
Yeah. You have another tip. This is tip number 5, and I wanted to hone on this because we had the Kostenbergers on in our first segment this morning at the 6 o'clock hour, and they talked about the importance of developing character with our kids more than even achievement at that point.
Yeah.
And you say success depends more on character than skill, and yet so much of what we're doing is we're teaching skills. Say more about the development of character.
You know, if you believe that given your brains, your talents, your passions, your education, all that is your persona, if you're not achieving all that you could, it's not a skill issue, it's a character issue.
Mm.
Have you ever met crazy smart people who never fulfill their potential?
Absolutely.
It's always because of their character. They lack the ability to face into the negative and deal with conflict. They lack the ability to build alliances. They lack the ability to develop trust. They lack the ability to get people to follow them. The relational aspect, the character aspect is lacking in their lives. And yet you find people who are the opposite. people who are just mediocre in skill but have great character can often go farther than those with great skill and mediocre character.
Mm. And would you suggest there's one particular character development, or just even a couple dimensions of character you'd say, if you really can develop this part of your character in your life, it's going to take you a long ways?
The two that I would say, one is the ability to face into conflict and resolve it, and the second one would be, gosh, it just came into my head and then left. The second one would be the ability to develop trust with other people,
yeah,
and then have them follow you as a leader.
And I'd love to follow up with that, because you mentioned another, maybe one final point out of this section that you have is number 16. It says that people can and will lie to you. So
yes.
How do you develop a sense of trust while recognizing that sometimes people are going to take advantage of you?
Yeah, it's an intuitive thing. You've got to be able to read between the lines of what they're saying and try to listen to the heart behind it. But I've had more people just lie bold-faced to my face over the years as leading businesses. And you just got to be prepared for it. You don't take it personally. It's not a personal thing. That's how they get through life sometimes, is by lying about what's actually going on. So one of the things I end my management team meetings with is, have you given me the last 10%? And by that, what I mean is the last 10% is the part of the message or what your thoughts that are really difficult to articulate, because you know it's going to lead to conflict. And so I go around and I do a gut check with everybody, and I say, last 10%, you give them the last 10%. You do that about a half a dozen times in management team meetings, and pretty soon people are using it. They're going, Bill, I got to give you the last 10% here.
I got to believe that develops just the kind of team that really can work together. It's great.
It does.
Well, we only have a few minutes left, and I really want to get to your Israel trip as well. And so when I think about Israel trips, I'm always thinking about ministry leaders and pastors taking people to Israel. Maybe it's an excuse to get to Israel themselves, right? So tell us what's underneath this trip for you. When are you going? What's happening?
We're going the last half of October of this year. We're going to go with JCF Tours. It's a tour I've been on before, so I know Yoni. Yoni's actually an American who now lives in Israel. He's probably more Israeli than he is American, but he's still evangelical. And we're going to go visit the Red Sea. We're going to visit Galilee. We're going to visit Mount Carmel, the place where David and Goliath fought, Bethlehem, Jerusalem, just a whole tour. It's going to be 13 days. And I'm leading the tour, and I will be doing some of the teaching over there, and Yoni will be doing some of the teaching. And we're going to have a series of Bible studies before we go to look at what happened at the places that we're going to visit. We still have some spots open.
I was just
going to
ask. Yeah, you do have some spots open. How can people access potentially getting involved with this tour?
You know, what they can do is email me at bill@bibleandbusiness.com.
Okay, bill@bibleandbusiness.com.
Yeah, and the and is A-N-D.
Yeah.
bill@bibleandbusiness.com.
Got
they
it.
Can just email me. They should count on about $4,500 per person plus incidentals. So I tell people it's $5,000 a person.
Sure.
It's a little spendy, but you know what? If you've never been to Israel, it just uncorks how you read the scriptures.
It does.
Because so much of the interpretation of the Bible is based on the geography at the time. And so if you don't understand the geography, you won't understand what it was for Elisha to follow Elijah from Bethel to Gilgal to Jericho across the Jordan. And when you actually see those places, you go, oh, I start to understand why that was such a momentous thing for him to follow. And also, quite frankly, what shape Elijah must have been in at his age to do it.
Way better than you and me, I suspect. And it's well said. I had a chance to study for 3.5 weeks in Israel as an undergrad. And
and
the Bible just blows open, like you said, because of it.
I
remember sitting in the Garden of Gethsemane, and
yes,
they were saying that these olive trees are likely 2,000 years or older. And these would have been the same trees that would have been there when Jesus and the disciples.
Yes.
I mean, the world of the Bible really does expand in front of you.
It really does. And being able to just to see the terrain and learn how people had to manage their lives in that terrain, huge. So I would invite anybody who has never been or who has been but wants to go again. We have some spots left. It's last half of October. send me an email.
How many people are going on the tour overall?
Right now we got 20.
20. So it's a good number. It's not too many. That it sounds like you can have some good conversations but not be overwhelming with the number of people.
Correct. We could probably put another 10 in here.
That's
great. And be very comfortable.
That's great. That's Bill English. And tell us one more time where they can go if they want to join this tour.
Just email me, bill@bibleandbusiness.com.
I love that you come on each week. Thank you. I just look forward to this conversation.
Thanks,
it goes way too fast. We are 26 minutes past the top of the hour. We'll take a break for news and come back for the last part of our program. Stay with us. Paul, I am feeling very insecure about my 1980s knowledge. We talked a little Back to the Future. Remind us of what that deal was about with the DeLorean.
Having 88 miles an hour and never quite getting into time travel, you still need the flux capacitor and the 1.21 gigawatts or gigawatts of power into it for that to work.
So that's my issue, is actually going 88 is not enough. You actually have to have the flux capacitor.
Yes, that and plutonium.
Well, I'm sure my kids can get on YouTube and figure out how to build one of those. I'm going to challenge them with that this afternoon.
Good thing you mentioned that. I looked online. You can buy a flux capacitor for $20, but the plutonium's not included.
We'll have to mine that out of there. Well, let's take a break for the news. When we come back, we'll head into some recent rulings in Canada that are actually going to have a pretty big impact, I think, in the North American situation on things like the GLBT conversation and other free market ideas. So stay with us. We'll come back after the news.
Are you telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Psychologist and author Dr. David Walsh has our topic this morning, the mind of the teenager, and he's going to talk a little bit about brain food for our kids.
Even though the brain only takes up about 2% of the body's weight and mass, it consumes more than 20% of the brain's energy. And so it is master control for everything that goes on. And so literally the fuel that we provide for master control becomes very important. We now know more about diet and how diet affects the brain functioning. We know a lot more about how exercise affects the brain functioning. And by the way, the impact is very, very positive. So we tell kids, you know, get out and run around and get some exercise. It's not just for healthy muscles and bones and cardiovascular system that we all know about. It's actually for a healthy brain. Another thing that's very important for brain function, so to speak, is sleep and making sure kids get enough sleep. So all of those things become kind of brain food, as well as, of course, the experiences that we provide them with.
That is Dr. David Walsh, psychologist and author, talking about the mind of a teenager. If you want to catch that entire segment, head to myfaithradio.com and search for Mind of a Teenager, Dr. David Walsh, and you'll find the entire part of his teaching. We'll take a 1 minute break, and when we come back, we'll be with John Sikkema from the Association for Reformed Political Action in Canada.
James chapter 1 commands us to be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. It's a tall order, isn't it? Especially with teens in the house. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. I love that verse because it communicates something I see every day. When parents jump to conclusions or begin lecturing before they've listened, it does more harm than good. When your teen acts up, ask questions first. Be quick to listen. Her actions may signal an issue or incident you haven't heard about yet. She's using her actions to alert you. So, as James tells us, let's be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry.
There's much more encouragement for parents from Mark Gregston online at parentingtodaysteens.org. That's parentingtodaysteens.org.
Twenty minutes before the top of the hour, you are listening to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and we are joined now by a regular contributor to the program, John Sikkema, who is with the Association for Reformed Political Action in Canada, bringing to us some of the important headlines and legal decisions from our neighbor to the north there. John, welcome to the program. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So tell us what you do sort of day in and day out when it's the Association for Reformed Political Action. What kinds of things are you involved with?
Sure. So our mission is twofold. So we want to get Christians educated, equipped, and informed to be involved in the political sphere, the public sphere, and also to bring a Christian, a biblical perspective to government. And that includes legislatures and the courts. And so what that looks like on kind of a day-to-day basis is doing policy research, presenting policy reports to parliamentary committees, meeting with members of parliament, and doing court interventions and cases usually dealing with religious freedom or kind of major moral issues. Assisted suicide and prostitution would be a couple of examples. So that's the kind of stuff that keeps us busy here.
And pretty significant headlines coming out recently, specifically one that we've been following down here, which is that Canada's highest court late last week ruled that an evangelical Christian law school can be denied accreditation if they continue to oppose homosexuality as part of their institution. It was a 7-2 ruling by the Supreme Court of Canada. Remind our listeners about what was at stake and then just talk about the implications of the decision.
Sure. So as you said, there is an evangelical school, a university in British Columbia that wanted to open a law school. It's opened other professional programs in the past, including a teacher's college and a nursing program. Its teacher's college actually had to fight its way to the Supreme Court to be recognized and actually won recognition 17 years ago. But the controversy at the school is because the school has a community covenant that everyone who goes there is expected to sign. And the community covenant says that you agree to refrain from sexual intimacy outside of a marriage between a man and a woman. And that was a lightning rod for controversy, and that was seen to be having a discriminatory impact on LGBT students who might want to attend the school. Now, Trinity Western actually had applied for and received approval for its school initially. It had met all the all the academic requirements and so on. And then a couple of law societies in certain provinces, in light of the controversy, took steps to refuse to recognize graduates of Trinity Western's proposed law school. As a result, Trinity Western didn't open its law school because it wanted to make sure its graduates would actually be able to practice law in this country, particularly some of the most populous provinces. And so that issue went to court. Are they free to both have a covenant that governs student conduct and to open a law school? And unlike the case 17 years ago with a teacher's college, this time Trinity Western lost, and it's quite a ruling. I'm sure we're going to get into it a little bit, but it departs from the law in several ways as it was, and seems to say that the kind of the balance of interest here and the public interest seems to strongly favor not approving such a school and therefore not allowing its graduates to be recognized and admitted to the legal profession.
And so I think about all of the Christian schools down in the United States, for example, that typically have some kind of lifestyle covenant that students sign voluntarily when they apply and are accepted into the institution that has to do with the kind of sexuality covenants that will be expected of them. And that's just part of signing on to the community. You have to give us a sense of what things are like in Canada and if there's similar kinds of schools. And then if this decision will have rippling implications for a variety of Christian schools.
So this is the remarkable thing. When it comes to law schools, there are no Christian law schools in Canada. There are no religious law schools in Canada, only secular ones. And so we actually have people who will graduate from a Christian law school in the States, do a bit of extra study in Canada just to comply with the requirements to study Canadian law, and then be admitted to the legal profession. So people can do it that way, which is one of the arguments Trinity Western made. But, of course, there are lots of Christian schools, accredited high schools, accredited universities, and accredited degree programs at Christian universities in Canada. And there's nothing really in this decision that explains why the reasoning behind the decision, that everyone should have an equal chance of getting into schools which lead to the profession. So they see that as a kind of equality of access to the profession, why that same rationale doesn't apply to other programs. And so it certainly has implications for these other programs. It's really hard to get around that, but course, this, you know, it starts here with the legal profession, which they kind of put in a special place.
And I don't know enough about the legal profession, John, especially when it comes to different countries. But would it be possible that at times maybe lawyers in the United States take a look at the legal arguments being made in Canada and would start making similar cases, even though it's a very different country?
Yes, I think there is. There certainly is a connection between what goes on in the two countries in terms of the culture and even what judges do. And I think what lawyers in the States are probably also concerned about is really departing from certain legal precedents that set kind of clear rules or clear protections for religious institutions, kind of in the name of really protecting people from what is now seen as harmful behavior. So if I put this maybe in as I'm talking as a lawyer, try to put it in more layman's terms, I think what's clear from this decision and which will be shared culturally is that the judges who ruled against this evangelical university are of a certain persuasion, a certain worldview persuasion. They believe and they say that a covenant that asks people to not have sex except within a marriage between a man and a woman is harmful, it's degrading, it's disrespectful, and it denies the dignity and identity of people who identify as LGBT. Now, as the dissent in this case points out, the majority is basically imposing its own moral views. It's judging the views of the university to be immoral, harmful, wrong, and really worthy of being despised and kept out of the public square, while affirming an ethic that says you, if your sexual behavior is what you consider to be part of your identity, no one, not even a private religious university, should prevent you from doing that. And so it's really, I think, a battle of worldviews here. And I think that there's a certain, it's easy to miss that when you couch something in legal language, which is again why I think the dissent says that they're not being very explicit about it, but the court in this decision is really imposing its own moral views and values.
Talking with John Sikkema and working through a pretty significant decision up at Trinity Western Law School in Canada in which they could be denied accreditation for some views related to covenant sexuality, at least historically understood within our Christian faith. So we'll take a short break here, John. When we come back, I would love to speak with you a little bit about some momentum around commercialized surrogacy and what that means in some of the law and family practices in Canada. Stay with us. You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. We'll be back in just a minute. Minutes before the top of the hour, and we are joined by John Sikkema from the Association for Reform Political Action in Canada, and talking about some of the significant decisions from our neighbor from our north, and that can trickle down into the United States as well. And John, just before the break, we referenced that there seems to be some momentum for commercializing surrogacy in Canada. And I'm not super familiar with this. I know how painful infertility can be for couples. It really it creates a lot of difficulty in life and just consternation about what the future can hold. But it sounds like maybe there's some problems with some of the surrogacy options that are offered to people. Walk us through what's happening.
Sure. So Canada has a member of parliament from the governing Liberal Party who's introduced a bill that basically would remove Canada's restrictions on prohibition on commercial surrogacy and commercial trade in human gametes, so sperm or eggs. So right now, Canada has a law that says you cannot pay someone or pay an agency to pay a surrogate to carry a child for you, and also says that you can't pay someone for their sperm or eggs. The law is not very well enforced. It actually allows reimbursement for a surrogate who is supposed to be an altruistic surrogate, who you can reimburse her for expenses, but that can often be very generous and comprehensive, and it's not regulated. And when it comes to sperm and eggs, what Canadians do is buy them from the States. And so there's already that going on. But there's actually the issue was debated in Canada about 14 years ago, and there was actually remarkable agreement across party lines that allowing a commercial trade in eggs and sperm and wombs would be contrary to human dignity, would raise a lot of ethical questions and problems and lead to potential exploitation and just kind of a changing cultural view of human nature and frankly of babies and a kind of possessive attitude towards acquiring them through certain means. So certainly from our Christian perspective, we've written some policy reports on this that, of course, children are a gift. They're a good gift to be rightly desired, and not being able to have a child for a couple can be deeply painful. What we look at in our study is, that said, not all means of conceiving a child are going to be ethical, and particularly when you start getting, I think, a market involved, that creates certain incentives and just raises some other difficult ethical questions. So, but it's remarkable to see the kind of all-party agreement that we shouldn't have a commercial trade in human sperm or eggs or wombs, and that now I think changing quite quickly, I think because of the rise of what are referred to as alternative families and non-heterosexual couples and other arrangements using sperm and egg donation and surrogacy in order to start a family in whatever kind of setup works for them or that they prefer. And so that's, I think, contributing to the increased demand in Canada for commercial trade in these things.
Mm. And is this part of a larger trend about what's happening in the tension between the state and religious practice in Canada? I saw a headline that an international doctors group recently asked the Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, to stop, in their mind, persecuting doctors for their religious beliefs, that there's this sense in which doctors can't any longer practice according to their conscience, at least that's the critique, but really they are being very actively controlled by the government. Is that part of what's happening in Canada?
Yeah, so I think there's a certain irony there. And on the one hand, that there's kind of the state wants to back up people's individual liberty against. We talked earlier about the Trinity Western, the Evangelical University, that even that a private school shouldn't restrict your sexual freedom. The law should facilitate your having a family however you want, including by paying for an anonymous sperm donor or paying a surrogate. And here, when it comes to physicians in Canada, they want to be able to practice medicine without having to be complicit in certain practices like abortion, euthanasia, which is legal in Canada, and certain treatments related to gender dysphoria that many physicians feel is unethical, like surgically altering someone's body and those kinds of things. Now, what is required of the law in Ontario, and I realize you refer to our Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, who certainly has not been, I think, very friendly on the freedom of conscience issue. But really, when it comes to doctors and healthcare, I think the responsibility lies at the provincial level. That would probably be less interesting for American listeners. But what's happening in the province of Ontario, Canada's biggest province, is that physicians are expected to do what's called effective referral. So if you don't want to do the abortion or you don't want to do the euthanasia, you've got to tell someone where to go. And that means telling them to go to someone you know will provide it for them or facilitate that for them. So it's like, it might be like saying, I don't sell drugs. I don't do that. I don't sell this illegal drug. But if you call this number, this guy will sell you some. And he said, that makes me complicit. But current policy in Ontario actually requires that, unlike most jurisdictions in the world. And so I think doctors in this province are kind of feeling the pinch there, and they're actually in a legal battle over this right now. And at the lower court, they lost their first court battle, but they're appealing that. So it's quite something to watch.
John Sikkema from the Association for Reformed Political Action in Canada. John, really appreciate the time this morning, understanding what's happening to our north and maybe some of the rippling implications that might head across the border. We've got 3 minutes before the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and wrap up our show. Well, apparently we're all 80s all the time. Maybe we jumped in our own DeLorean and hit that 88 miles an hour.
What's
with the flux
with that,
capacity.
Marty?
Exactly. So, Paul, if you could actually get that flux capacitor to work and go back to any concert in the 1980s, who would you go see? Assume the tickets are free, front row. Who are you going to go see for a 1980s concert?
Oh, my. I don't know. I mean, Huey Lewis would have been great.
Huey Lewis is outstanding.
But I was, you know, back at that time, back in the 80s, believe it or not, I was kind of the nerdy guy. I liked Ellen Parson.
Ellen Parson. I got it. Okay. Well, thanks for the great hour. We look forward to having you join us again tomorrow. It's Faith Radio Mornings. We'll deal with more 1980s stuff. We'll see you tomorrow.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.